You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Before we introduce you to two of those being recognized at this year's University of Alaska Southeast graduation, an announcement from UAS about the Juno campus's virtual graduation ceremony, which was originally scheduled for online viewing at 5 this Friday evening, but it has been moved to Sunday afternoon at 3. Now, you can find more information about the schedule online. Just go to uas.alaska.edu/commencement. Again, uas.alaska.edu/commencement. Now, during this virtual ceremony, Pauline Kukesh Duncan of Sitka will receive an honorary doctorate of education. She's well known as an educator and a Thlinket culture bearer who recognized early in her teaching career that there were no relevant materials that combined Thlinket culture with Alaska educational standards. So she set out to create them, and the end result, beautiful books and posters, now used in school districts throughout Southeast Alaska, including her collection of Raven stories, part of the Baby Raven Read series. It was recognized by the National Library of Congress Literacy Awards for Best Practices, one of only 15 programs in the world to receive that honor in 2017. Duncan's family is also well known. Her younger brother, Albert Kukesh, was a longtime state lawmaker, still recognized as a Native leader across the state. When I spoke with Pauline Duncan earlier this week about her honorary doctorate, I asked her, was she surprised?
I'm still trying to grasp that feeling. You know, it's unbelievable. It's something that I was not expected. It is a total surprise, because when I walked away 15 years ago from teaching, I didn't think another honor or anything could come back to me again. And so, yes, I'm very, very pleased and very happy to be honored.
But did you ever think that you would be honored with a doctorate and be called Dr. Pauline Duncan?
Never. I never expected to have such a title. Very impressed.
In some ways, the title also reflects the importance of the revival of the Thlinket language and your role in that. And so many people who have been involved in that might feel especially proud of that, because they've been working hard to bring the Thlinket language back into the community. So do you think that this doctorate honors more than just you?
Yes. And that was my goal behind developing all of my curriculum, just because I felt like it was running away from us, from me, and so I needed to bring it back. And I thought the best possible way to bring all of this and to make sure that it was geared toward the children, because children just can take it and they can go running with it. And so they were my best hope. And they caught on. They didn't disappoint me. They caught on to the songs easily, and they were drumming, and they were singing and doing the Pledge of Allegiance and Thlinket. They were out there picking seaweed with me and bringing it in and going out and turning it, and they were eating the heron eggs, and they were taking some home. They had fried herring. So every possible way that I could bring the Thlinket culture and the language into the classroom, I was desperately working hard at it.
But there was a time, I think, in our recent history that people were ready to let Thlinket and other Indigenous languages fade. And I imagine that it took a lot of faith to try to revive it and show that children can learn, that you can have new speakers.
It wasn't difficult to convince me that it could be done, because I'm not a speaker, and I knew absolutely nothing of the Thlinket language. Al Duncan is a fluent speaker in the home, And so he was able to translate everything that I thought could possibly be translated that relates to the classroom. He translated it for me. And Robbie Littlefield, another one who was writing it and working as hard, if not harder, than both Al and I at this, trying to help us out so that I was able to bring the language into the classroom and the culture. I'll have to say that I can't accept this doctorate on my behalf. I'm accepting this degree on behalf of so many others that have played a part all the way from the beginning of my literacy life up to when I was in the classroom there.
A lot of people know you for your Baby Raven series. Can you tell us how that came to pass?
While I was in the classroom, I researched legends because I thought, you know, why am I teaching all of these other stories? And I should be teaching them Tlingit legends because there are so many important lessons that come from a legend. So I started researching and reading the legends. Well, after 56 pages sometimes, or 20 pages, or 10 pages of reading one legend, it was like, this is not going to work for first grade level. And so I took the legends and I condensed them into one page. And that's how the series, the Raven series, came about. I went and took all of the old legends of the three stories. In my classroom, it was just printed on one page, and I read the legend to them, and that was it. And Sea Alaska got a hold of it, and they were able to hire an illustrator, and she just brought magic to the stories.
Who is the illustrator?
Lindsay Karen. And she travels all over Alaska to different villages and to different communities. And she is an amazing artist. I'm so grateful for her work. It was just amazing what she did. She brought the stories out and she just made it into a magic book. And it was appealing to adults and to children alike.
When you receive an honor like this, it must make you look back on the past and reflect back on your life.
Yes, when I look back on my literary background and look to see, okay, where did I develop all of this interest in reading and writing? I have to go all the way back to my early childhood. I have to give so many people credit for it. I give some of my elementary teachers who were not, came into the village of Vangoon, and they weren't just teachers. They were friends. They invited us for games, and they did all kinds of extra things with us. And then the pastor, Eva Wright, who had us memorizing all the books of the Bible for contests. And then I look back on comic books that played a big part in my literary background, because my brother Albert Kukash and I, every night we would go out and we would trade comic books. That was the thing. I mean, that was our colored TV, you know, all colored pictures on the comic books. There were two stacks of comic books. One stack, they would tell us, we haven't read this one yet, not ready for trading. So while they were going through our comic books, looking to see which ones they wanted, my brother Albert and I would grab the one on the no pile, and we would immediately just start going through the whole thing. I have to say I learned how to speed read from that, because by the time we left the house there, we were satisfied. We read that whole pile of no trading. And my father would send to the Juneau Library every month for a box of books. And we would look forward to the box of books coming. We would read through the whole thing. He would send it back, and then they would send another box back. That was my literary background, basically, and plus the Dick and Jane series and all of that in the regular classroom, where all of my reading and my interest in school comes from.
It's kind of interesting in your family, because You have a lot of people who have graduated from college. Pretty amazing.
Yes. Yes. Between all of my siblings and my children alone, we have over 30 degrees in our family. And I have to say that we have 4 doctorate degrees and then master's degrees and bachelor's. So, yes, we do have a number of them. You know, it's just expected that you will go to school, you will continue your education, and so that has been our message throughout all of our years of raising our own children. I was the first one to leave to go to college and graduated from college in my family, 9 brothers and sisters.
So now that you have this honorary doctorate, how does your family react to that since you have so many degrees in your family?
Very excited, very proud, and very supportive. And it's like when I call to say, you know what, they just called me. I've been given this. And they say, I know. They already talked with us and we were part of the whole process. Oh my gosh, Albert. I called my brother Albert and he said, I know. It was just like, I guess I was the only one in the out that didn't know. So, yeah, they're very, very pleased and supportive and very proud, I'm sure.
Well, these kind of awards are given often to people who epitomize lifelong learning. Do you feel you fit in that category?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. From the beginning of time, looking back on my childhood all the way up until now, even after I left the classroom, I had 5 of my grandchildren who were in kindergarten all the way up to different early childhood classes. And so when I retired, I actually had all of my grandchildren in my home. So I just continued working with them. I volunteered for a little bit in the Head Start program, and then the books start coming along, and then I worked with writing stories and other things. I've been taking a lot of pleasure classes too, such as weaving with Dolores Churchill, Terry Rothgar, Raven's Tale. So I've continued in a different way of learning.
So when you came up with the Baby Raven series, how did you put it together in your head? How did you say, okay, I'm going to boil it down for children's stories? What was that process?
Working with first grade students, I knew what was going to work as part of their comprehension and part of their being able to look at stories and really hear the story for what it was. And so I had that experience as a classroom first grade teacher to develop books like that, where on one page there was only the one sentence that the student could look at, Raven brings us fire, and only one sentence, but yet they see 2 full pages of illustrations. Turn the page. Because of my background, I guess I was able to write stories for them.
So before the books came out, you had the students as a way to kind of test how these ideas of yours would work. And what did you notice in the classroom when you shared these stories?
They listened. They understood. They comprehended. And they were able to pinpoint the lesson that that story was trying to teach them about.
That must have been a wonderful feeling when you realized that they got it.
It was a very wonderful and fulfilling feeling because I knew that I was continuing with the Tlingit culture by bringing legends into the classroom, because I couldn't find legends that were adaptable to that level. And it made me excited and it made me feel like, okay, I'm really making a difference because I'm able to take that whole 10-page legend that I just read, and I brought it down to one page, and they still knew what that story was trying to tell them and teach them about. So, yes.
Do you think we underestimate kids?
I think so. After having the first graders, yes, it's just like their minds are just like, oh, they open up and then it just continues. Information can keep going on and on and on. I didn't have time to think about that in my classroom. I didn't think, I wonder if they can do this. I just assumed they could because I had laid the groundwork down for them. I developed a legend. I had a felt story on there, up there, hanging in the wall. And they were able to look at and listen to the story that I read. Then they were able to go up there and retell the story on their own by using the felt pieces that I had up there. And same with 10 Sitka herring. I wanted them to appreciate the herring fishery, the herring spawn. And so I developed the 10 Sitka herring book. So we would bring the herring in. We ate the herring. We fried it. We ate heron eggs. They took heron eggs home. And then they colored and illustrated their own 10 Sitka herring booklet.
I guess it's a mix of modeling it and then getting them to do it.
Correct. Correct.
Boy, I would have loved to have seen you in the classroom.
Well, thank you.
Since you've been out of teaching for a while, you must have a chance to reconnect with old students. And what do you see among them, the impact of them having learned some of these traditional stories?
There were a couple of students that I know of, one who is working with the elders here in the community. And she told me that she was so grateful. She's a non-native, and she was so grateful to have that experience of all the different foods and all the different things that she learned in the classroom. Because then when it came, oh, I bet you've never tasted herring eggs or something like that, they said, oh, yes, I have. I said, what? When? That type of thing. And then another student who's a marine biology major just felt like there were a lot of things that came from the classroom that were instilled into her, and now she's going to graduate with that degree.
Dr. Duncan, at 74, are you still learning?
Oh, every day. Every day, I'm still learning. I'm still working. I'm weaving and I read. I'm okay with where I am today. And I have grandchildren and I'm enjoying them. They're growing into wonderful adults and I just love being a part of all of their lives. And I have to say, right here, I'll stop and say this. Having this doctorate degree is absolutely wonderful. But the first and first greatest honor that I could ever have is being called mom. I have Melanie Board, Lisa Gassman, Albert Peter Duncan, Paul Duncan, and Crystal Duncan. Those are my five children. And so I already had an honor degree as being called their mother. And then I ended up with another honor, Grandma, Mitchell Marlis Board, Alec Tristan, Nyla Duncan, Elise Duncan, and Emma Gassman. And my third honor was being called sister to Nellie, Stella, Martha, Gordon, Matthew, and Al Kukesh. So to me, that was it. And then this other degree came in, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm so blessed.
Pauline Kukesh Duncan, now Dr. Duncan. She gives a lot of credit to Al Duncan, who was her husband at the time and a fluent Tlingit speaker, as well as Robin Littlefield, an adjunct professor at UAS. They helped her translate the books and the teaching materials into Tlingit. They worked as a team during the 1990s to pioneer Indigenous education in Southeast Alaska. Well, before we go, a word about Gordon Jackson, who is also being honored by UAS for meritorious service to the community. He has worn many, many hats over the years, leadership roles with tribes, Native corporations, state government, as well as nonprofits. Those who nominated him say he's one of the unsung heroes of rural education and economic development. Well, as far as Gordon Jackson goes, there simply was no other way than to wear all these hats.
A friend of mine recently called me a jack of all trades, having worked in all those different organizations, nonprofit, profit-making, government, many boards and commissions, and even running a purse center. You know, I like to learn new things, and it was kind of fun to get into these kind of things and learn how they worked.
We'll have more on Gordon Jackson's achievements on Monday.